Hey Seahawkers, welcome back from the break. We have on the line Johnny Peel. Johnny Peel has been a 12 since 1983, a season ticket holder since 1997, and a blogger since 2008. Johnny's probably my favorite blogger online because of the historic perspective you get, but also a passion that you just don't get from the average sports writer. So great to have you on the show, Johnny. Welcome.
It is great to be on your podcast. I'm really excited. Thank you.
So your blog is at DaveCraigStrikeBeard.blogspot.com.
Right.
And for fans
right.
who may not get that reference, or maybe they don't even know who Dave Craig is, tell us where the name of the blog came from.
Well, okay, just really brief. You mentioned maybe people don't know who Dave Craig is. Maybe newer 12s who have started following the team just in the last few years. Dave Craig was our quarterback throughout most of the 1980s. And if you actually look at his numbers, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL through the 1980s. When he actually retired from the NFL, he was in the top 10 in many, many different statistical categories. When he was our starting quarterback through most of the 90s, the Seahawks had a number of successful seasons. We won playoff games. We won division titles under him. But there was this weird undercurrent through Dave Craig's tenure with the Seahawks, which was that, A, he was an undrafted free agent from this tiny place, Milton College, that not that long after he graduated from, folded its doors, ceased to exist. So he joins the Seahawks as an undrafted free agent. He actually ends up winning the starting job from Jim Zorn in training camp in 1982. But during the player strike, we played 2 weeks and the player strike happened. When the team came back from the strike, Jack Patera, the coach who had installed Craig as a starter, was fired. The new interim coach was Mike McCormick. And he kept Jim Zorn. He reinstalled Jim Zorn as a quarterback. And when Chuck Knox took over the team in 83, the season started the same way. First 8 games with Jim Zorn at quarterback. And the team was 4-4 through 8 games. 4-3, sorry, through 7 games. In the 8th game against the Steelers, the Seahawks fell way behind in the first half, 24-0. Zorn was benched. Dave Craig came in, led a furious near comeback, and he kept the job. So the rest is history. Seahawks go to the 1983 AFC Championship game. Dave Craig goes to the Pro Bowl after the 1984 season. And like I said, leads the Seahawks all success. But what's really interesting and from a historical perspective is that when he was the Seahawks quarterback, we were constantly trying to replace him. We tried to replace him with Warren Moon when Warren Moon came out of the CFL. In 1987, we drafted Kelly Stauffer. We actually traded for a draft pick for Kelly Stauffer. To try to replace him. So Craig was constantly, the management was always trying to replace him. And he's sort of infamous also among Seahawks fans because if you've heard of Dave Craig, you've probably also heard of the fact that he's among the all-time NFL leaders in fumbles. And what he was relatively famous for, and a couple times really did bite us in the ass, for what fans back then called the soap dish pass. So Craig had these relatively small hands. But once he would go back to pass, He'd cock his arm back, and in the backward part of his motion, so it was a fumble, the ball would just pop out of his hands. And I forget what year, but there was a famous incident of this in a close competitive game in Denver, where the ball just pops out of his hand, and Carl Mecklenburg grabs it and runs for a Denver touchdown. So he wasn't necessarily the most popular Seahawk when he was playing, but his reputation has improved over time, I think. And I always was drawn to him as a fan because of his background and the fact that he succeeded despite constant efforts to replace him and a lot of hostility from a lot of the Seahawks fan base. So that's just, I hope, a relatively brief historical perspective on Craig, but about the name of the blog, right? So the name of the blog comes from the fact that there was another player strike. So there were 2 player strikes during Dave Craig's early NFL career. In 1987, there was another strike. And this time, during the strike, the owners brought in replacement players and to break the will of the players' union. And it worked. After 3 weeks with replacement players and the league was actually relatively surviving TV ratings and attendance-wise, the union came back. The players came back. But during the strike, Dave Craig grew this glorious beard, this really thick, beard, like this Castro almost level beard. And it's really interesting because if you go up, you can find this online. If you find the 1987 Seahawks highlight video and the interviews in that video, he's still got the beard. So I remember being a kid, being 12 years old, and the players come back from the strike, and our first game was in the LA Coliseum against the Raiders. And Craig had this beard, and we went out there, and we just destroyed the Raiders. We won something like 35-13. And then the next week, we came home and played the Vikings, and he still had the beard. And we won again. We beat the Vikings, who were going to end up going to the NFC Championship game that year. Big win for us. Then, I mean, look, history, like, it's clouded because you're a kid, and your memories are not necessarily always accurate. But then after that game, he shaved the beard. And as I remember it, we lost that next game. So to me, like, that beard that Dave Craig grew during the strike had this mythical aura and power. And, you know, when I decided to start blogging back in 2008, for whatever reason, that just stuck in my head, Dave Craig Strike Beard.
I love it.
So that's where the name of the blog comes from.
That's good stuff there, Johnny. Now, I might be just as guilty as Seahawks management, because every time I played Tecmo Super Bowl growing up, you know, like the 1991 video game on original Nintendo, I'd always bench Dave Craig for Stauffer. It's terrible. Every time I played with the Seahawks. But I do have one quick...
Refresh my memory. Was that the version of the game where the Seahawks had the pink uniforms?
No, that wasn't, but I know which one you're talking about. I think that was the original one, and this was like the second one that came out.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah, and greatest football video game of all time. Madden doesn't even compare, in my opinion. But
it doesn't.
I do have one question, though, when it comes to historical beards. Who has the better beard, Sean McGrath or Dave Craig, his strike beard?
Oh, I got to go with Dave Craig's strike beard. Seriously, if you can YouTube this, go, or it's on NFL.com, whatever where you find it. At its height, Dave Craig's beard was incredibly impressive.
See, I don't
so rich and thick.
I don't even know if you can go to McGrath, because he didn't even play a snap in the regular season. I think if you have to compare it, you have to compare it to like a guy like Michael Bennett.
But
maybe,
his beard is impressive. Like, his beard is so impressive that I thought you could throw him in the conversation. Like, it overcame his non-playing status.
Okay. So I do want to talk a little bit about the game, Johnny. I wanted to ask you, after watching the game yesterday, what did that loss to the Colts, what did that tell you about the Seahawks team?
Well, the main thing it told me is that while we have a very, very good team, a great team, I think, they're still not quite at the level where they can consistently win without their best performance. And we haven't seen that yet this year. I mean, for all of the positive things that have happened this year, even in that winning against the 49ers, we have not seen this team at full strength, and then also, while at full strength, playing to their full potential. We haven't seen that yet. And I think what we learned yesterday was that we can play with any team in the league in any venue. What I hope, and I've already heard some lazy analysis from national media types, you know, oh, the Seahawks aren't the same team on the road, and I don't think that has anything to do with what happened yesterday. I think it's much more about we ran into a very, very good Colts team. This is a Colts team that I think, I'm not going to say that they're going to go to the Super Bowl because Denver seems fairly insurmountable in the AFC, but I think the Colts are a team that could end up in the AFC Championship game. And no, we did not play our best game yesterday, and we were 6 points short on the road against a very good team. If you look at other teams that have won Super Bowls in recent years, that sort of loss is fairly typical. If it's an isolated thing, if it's not the start of some downward spiral, which I don't think that it will be, this is not a loss that should overly distress any Seahawks fan.
So is there anything that you can point to? Is there any one thing in that game where you look at and you say that was the biggest difference between the win and the loss?
You see, there's going to be a lot of 12s out there that are sick of other fans using this as an explanation. I'm not even going to say excuse, but I'm going to say it's an explanation. And while we did have ample opportunities throughout the game to take advantage of opportunities and win it, I do think the single moment I point to the turning point in the game, is the moment where the Seahawks block the punt, Jerron Johnson falls on it in the end zone, I feel clearly establishes himself in bounds with possession, and that 5 points, I feel, completely would have changed the tenor of the game. I think if the Seahawks go up 17-0 at that point, not that it would have been a 41-0 blowout, But I don't see the Seahawks losing that game if they jump out to a 17-0 lead rather than a 12-0 lead. It changes the entire trajectory of the rest of the game. So, yes, I know there's a lot of 12s probably listening right now going, oh, we're sick of using the officials as an excuse. But beyond that, obviously, there was a number of really questionable calls, particularly against the Seattle secondary, that kept Indianapolis drives alive in the second half. So I do believe that the main deciding factor on that in that game yesterday was the officiating. So that's my honest opinion. Not that we couldn't have won anyway, and we didn't get it done, but I do think that if I'm looking at one thing that decided that game, it was the officiating.
Yeah, and I can kind of sympathize, too, with some of the 12s that say, you know, yeah, we're tired. We don't want to put it on the officiating. And I could even look at that play and even put that on the Seahawks a little bit, because there was nobody near that punt. And it wasn't – it was slowing to a roll in the back of the end zone. And I know, you know, Jaron Johnson wanted to get there and get on it. But, you know, if he could have slowed down and not had his momentum carried so quickly out of the back of the end zone, or if he maybe could have batted it back because there were a couple guys behind him, you know, I think they get that touchdown there. So you can put it on the officials, but, yeah, you could probably put it a little bit on the team too.
Oh, yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's definitely worthwhile to point out that he could have done the move where he just bats it back. And could a Colts player pick it up and run for a first down? I guess theoretically. But it's much more likely that another Seahawk trailing grabs the ball and it's a touchdown. So I think that's a fair point.
And honestly, that call itself, that's one where, you know, if I look at it objectively, you know, it was called that he did not have control by the time he goes out of the end zone. That's the call on the field. To me, when you look at it on the instant replay, especially from that kind of above angle, it looks like the ball may have moved somewhere, you know, close to when he was right at the edge of the boundary there. And if it's at all close, it's got to go with the call in the field. So honestly, I wasn't that upset about the call itself, especially on the road. Those are the calls that aren't going to go your way when you're on the road. It's just something to be expected. I don't know. It didn't bother me a ton. I feel like it was one of those that's it's tough to call one way or the other. I think if they would have called it touchdown on the field and they would have overruled it, I would have been upset. But they called it a safety on the field and they didn't overrule it. And honestly, I don't know that that was a terrible call.
Oh, no, in the history of abysmal calls against the Seahawks, it's not in the league of Vinny Testaverde's phantom touchdown or Keyshawn Johnson's touchdown on Monday night for Dallas, which is one of the forgotten terrible calls in Seahawks history.
Yeah, you know what? You might have to explain that one a little bit. I don't know if I remember it.
Okay, 2004, Monday night game, Dallas at Seattle. Seattle, the Seahawks are fighting for their playoff lives. And it was a crazy game. The Seahawks went out to a big lead. Then the Cowboys scored something like 29 unanswered points. They went out to a big lead. Then the Seahawks come back, and they end up with a 10-point lead with about 2 minutes left. Then, this is just traumatic. Then what ends up happening is, like I said, they're down by 10. And, oh, by the way, side note, this is the last great game of Jerry Rice's career. Everybody seems to like, and no, I'm serious, because yeah. Everybody likes to dismiss his tenure with the Seahawks, but he had an amazing, I don't remember the numbers offhand, but he had something like 8 catches for 145 yards and a touchdown. You know, but anyway, I'm getting off topic. But, so, Dallas, I believe, is down by 10, if I remember it right. So, Testaverde, once again, Testaverde, now he's with the Cowboys. Testaverde just chucks it into the end zone. Keyshawn Johnson goes up, and it's called a touchdown on the field. But the problem is, and the replay booth doesn't even review it, the problem is he never gets his second foot down in bounds. Like, his elbow hits the ground out of bounds before he gets the second foot tapped down. So it should not have been a touchdown. Then, after the touchdown is not reviewed, the Cowboys recover the onside kick, and then Julius Jones, remember him? Mm-hmm. Julius Jones murdered us that night, runs for the winning touchdown. The Seahawks, I believe, lost the game 44-39. One of the brutal moments of bad officiating in 2003, 2004, 2005 for the Seahawks.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're over it, Johnny.
I will honestly tell you, I don't think I'm going to be over Super Bowl 40
ever
until we win. When we win the Super Bowl, I'll be over it. That's the moment where I'll be like, okay, I can stop worrying about it. I can actually go back and watch footage of it. I can't.
Oh, I hear
it's
you.
Been almost 8 years. I can't watch highlights of Super Bowl 40. I can't.
I hear you. I'm the same way on that, Johnny. I actually got into it with a gal who was a Steelers fan at the gas station like 2 days ago, just because she had on a Steelers hat and I had on the, you know, my Hawk stuff. And, you know, we started talking a little bit and, you know, I just had to let her know that that was a Phantom Championship for her and that it didn't belong to her. And I think she knew by the time we were done. Yeah, I felt good about it.
Well, you know how I always put it, because I get uncomfortable with the 12s who talk about conspiracies and so on and so forth. To me, I don't even say that the officials cost us the game. I say that they cost us the chance to win the game.
Yeah,
I agree with
that. That's how I always have looked at it, because the officiating was so skewed in Pittsburgh's favor. And I've always been of the opinion that that was due to the fact that it wasn't a normal Super Bowl crowd. I think the officiating crew showed up. They expected your usual Super Bowl crowd that was VIPs who were half watching the game. And then they came in to Ford Field, and it was 60,000 Pittsburgh fans waving their piss yellow little towels. And I really believe it was mainly that officiating crew was intimidated and they choked on that big stage.
Yeah, I would agree. I didn't think that there was anything intentional in that game as far as the referees went or a conspiracy of any kind. It's the way it kind of happened to go. And, you know, the fact that the official came back and actually apologized to the team a couple years later, you know, I'm fine with him. We're fine.
I wouldn't say that I'm fine with it. It's still kind of an open wound, because I always get fixated whenever I end up getting in a little cycle where I think about it. I get stuck on, what would that win have meant? Not just to Seahawks fans.
Yeah.
What would that win have meant to Mike Holmgren's legacy? To Matt Hasselbeck's legacy? To Sean Alexander's legacy? And that's what makes me the most angry about how that game went.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you definitely look at Sean Alexander a different way. You know, he did have those couple years after that MVP season where he just wasn't the same type of running back we kind of remember. And, you know, if you think of him as a Super Bowl champion, you know, maybe you because he's going to be up on the Hall of Fame ballot this year. So maybe you start thinking about him as a Hall of Famer. And right now, you think of him, well, you know, maybe he's not Hall of Fame. He's definitely a Ring of Honor guy, I think, when you consider the great Seahawks running backs. But you definitely don't have that same kind of feeling about him being a Hall of Famer.
No, I think that's exactly right. And then it denied Holmgren becoming the first coach ever to win a Super Bowl with two different franchises.
Right. Absolutely. Still, I'm
not getting angry talking about it.
Yeah. Maybe we should just move on. So, I want to talk a little bit about something a little more positive, and that's the Seahawks quarterback situation. And we saw it in the game against the Colts, down by 6 in the fourth quarter. I think there was a collective feeling among Seahawks fans that Russell Wilson was poised to pull off another comeback in the fourth quarter. And I think we all had that feeling. But in your memory, was there ever a time when you had that kind of confidence in a guy, you know, thinking back to guys like Dave Craig or Matt Hasselbeck or, you know, even, you know, some of those other guys that were only here for a couple of years, Warren Moon, Trent Dilfer, at any time was there a quarterback where in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left, you had a guy where you said, okay, he's going to win the game?
Well, I want to be actually fair to the historical record. I mean, I'm going to be honest and say I never felt that way with Dave Craig. I mean, I think Dave Craig had stretches of brilliance. But no, you never felt like, oh, okay, Dave Craig is going to go out and win this game for us, even though he did a few times. Mm-hmm. But you never really had that feeling. Now, Matt Hasselbeck, I think it's really fair. It's important to be fair to his legacy and point out that he did have a period in 2005, 2006, 2007, where he led us to multiple fourth-quarter comebacks. So I did have a point in, like, really in 06, 07, or if we were behind with the ball late in the game, I did feel like, with Hasselbeck, we were probably going to score and win the game. Oh, God, that was way too close to his infamous line at the coin toss in Green Bay. God, I didn't even mean to do that. We want the ball, we're going to score. But I felt like with him, if we're talking about peak Hasselbeck, right? Mm-hmm. And peak Hasselbeck is 05, 06, 07. Yeah, I did feel like if we got the ball, needed a field goal to win, he would get us in position for the traitor Josh Brown to make the field goal.
You know, I love that you brought that up about Matt Hasselbeck, too, because, you know, I really did have that same feeling about him, too. When he said that line, I was fired up. I was like, heck yeah, we do want the ball.
I liked it when he said it then. I still like it today. I thought that was awesome to go out in the middle of Lambeau Field with all that swagger and just be like, yeah, we want the ball. We're going to score. And, I mean, even if it doesn't happen, at least you had the balls to say it, you know?
Right. And if you might be able to just make an argument that I just might have a proclivity for getting really invested in our quarterbacks. But at this point, sitting here today, my two favorite Seahawks of all time are Dave Craig and Matt Hasselbeck, and my favorite current Seahawks player is Russell Wilson. Hasselbeck aside for a second, I do agree with you about this idea that while I did have that feeling for about Hasselbeck at his peak, I feel like we're going to have that with Russell Wilson for a decade. Mm-hmm. And that's so incredibly exciting because it's really funny. You even just already look back at last season. I mean, he had the number of successful comebacks, but remember there were, I can think of three games in 2012 where he completed the comeback. He did it only to have the defense give the lead back to the other team.
Right. Yeah. Or Braylon Edwards dropped the game-winning pass in the end zone. There's that too.
Right. Right. I mean, I right off the top of my head, I can think of Detroit, Miami, and the playoff game in Atlanta. Those are games that Russell Wilson won, only to have the defense give it back.
And almost the Chicago game too.
That's right. That's right. I mean, and we all love how that ended up turning out, but it was almost a complete disaster.
Right. So one last thing I wanted to ask you before you go, and you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but you said in your blog that for this last game, you said that your conviction for the Seahawks, that conviction that they'll win the Super Bowl this year remains unshaken. What has you so confident?
Okay, I'll break it down. I'll try to keep this as succinct as possible. Number one, if you look at the rest of our schedule, I think we have something like the second weakest remaining schedule in terms of opponents' winning percentages. To me, and combine that with our advantage at Seahawks Stadium, I sense that we're going to go something like 14-2. And it looks like now it's going to end up being crucially important that we play the Saints early December, Sunday Night Football at Seahawks Stadium, at home. Because I think the team that wins that game probably hosts the NFC Championship game. So to me, I look at the fact that we're going to get to full strength. We're going to get weapons like Percy Harvin back on the field. We're going to get well against a relatively easy schedule. So I see us winning home field advantage through the NFC playoffs. And then here's another reason why I think we are going to win the Super Bowl. Because everybody likes to talk about the specter of poor weather conditions at MetLife Stadium for the Super Bowl. And even if they're great conditions for early February, they're not necessarily going to be supremely conducive to Peyton Manning putting up 50 points. So if we want to assume right now, and I think it's a safe assumption, that if we make it to the Super Bowl, our opponent will be the Denver Broncos. Not only are we, I think, uniquely well-equipped to slow down the Broncos' offense in terms of we have a very physical secondary. We have, I think, definitely by the time we get to that point of the season, we're going to have a front four that can put pressure on Manning without blitzing. And then we have an offense that can run the ball, eat up clock, keep the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands, hopefully, for long stretches. If you throw on top of that the possibility of less than ideal weather at MetLife Stadium for the Super Bowl, I love our chances in a Super Bowl matchup against the Broncos. So that's why I still feel like, despite yesterday's result, I mean, I know that I am biased, obviously, but I've never, ever in my life been more confident about the Seahawks' chances to actually hoist a Lombardi trophy in a few months.
Well, I have to tell you, Johnny, I love the bias, I love the blog, and I love the historical perspective you provide on it. And I also love how I can always count on you to never call the stadium by its corporate name. You'll always go to Seahawks Stadium. So I appreciate that.
I would say this too, because you probably have some listeners who are also Sounders fans. I say, let a thousand flowers bloom. You guys call it Royal Broham Park. Do it. That's fine. You know it's called Seahawks Stadium. But no, I am not going to call it the corporate name. Nope. It is Seahawks Stadium.
Well, thanks for coming on, Johnny, and we'll look forward. Maybe we'll have you on coming up after the Super Bowl to talk about the win, too. We definitely would like to have you on again.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.